We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Welcome to the Spiegel and Parkin Show.
It feels like the launch of the offseason, kind of officially, doesn't it?
I need people. Let's make a deal, y'all.
I have a trade idea to fleece a dumb team. I love fleecing the Orioles.
Your ideas are intriguing to me.
Trading Addison Russell for Zach Britton and, say, Kevin Gausman, who's got multiple years as a starting pitcher, while keeping in mind that you're going to sign Manny Machado to play shortstop next year.
What? Do you know what he's talking about?
Banking on Machado to sign here strikes me as unlikely.
Ding, ding, ding.
What do we have for her, Johnny?
Let's get Machado in the deal now, and we'll negotiate an extension.
Well, I like that idea.
Right? Am I interested? I'm not really interested. Should I play like I'm interested, but I'm not that interested? But do I want to be interested?
Maybe you can get Gausman, too.
They're giving everybody.
Sure. Let's make it big and big. Give him Almora. Right?
Almora and Russell. What are we doing here?
Were you a texter?
Danny Parkins.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
Middays on the Score.
Good morning. It is the Spiegel and Parkins Show. I'm Danny Parkins in solo. So Spiegel gets his name cut from the open when he's not here. Did I hear that at the very end?
I do the whoever's in gets their name in the open.
That's cutthroat. I like that.
He's on the front end of it.
He is on the front end of it. Rick Camp throwing his weight around. Busy Monday. What day is it? Wednesday? Yeah, it's busy Wednesday on the Spiegel and Parkins Show. Don't worry, I'll make a mistake every segment today. We have Mike Florio at 10 o'clock. We have Michael Irvin at 11:20. Pat Manley in studio from 11:40 till 1. What happens at 11:40 on Wednesdays? Oh, yeah, that's right.
Can't do it.
Can't do it.
Can't do it.
I shamed Pat Manley into doing can't do it today. So get your questions ready. Text line 670-11. This is a man who played 16 years for the Chicago Bears and worked with Matt Spiegel. So there are plenty of topics, plenty of people you can ask him questions about. It's funny, I basically just guilt tripped him because Pat is so nice and he's missed the last two Wednesdays. And he texted Spiegel and I to let us know who his special guest was for today. Because he always books a guest for us, uses his Rolodex in the noon hour on Wednesdays. And we'll talk about that when he gets here. But he then heard, you know, Spiegel was like, oh, you know, Danny's in solo tomorrow. So Pat texts me separately and says, hey, you know, you want me to come down an hour early? I can maybe do 11 to 1 with you since you're solo tomorrow. Help you out a little bit. Well, I enjoy working solo sometimes. I enjoy the space. I enjoy the freedom. I enjoy the sound of my own voice. I know it's going to come as shocking to you. But also, I really just wanted to be solo with Michael Irvin. Like, if he wanted to host at 11 and for Can't Do It, it would have been totally cool. But the Michael Irvin segment is quickly becoming one of my favorites of the week. And I really just wanted to go one-on-one with the playmaker today. So I was like, how about you come in and help me out during Can't Do It? And so since I already had known that he had offered to be here at 11, I knew that he didn't have a scheduling commitment. And so he just responded, okay. So, yeah, I guilt tripped him into can't do it. He said he would never do it. But now because I'm solo and I presented it as if I needed help for it, Pat Manley will be in. Lovey, Rex, the NFC title season, whatever you want. Pat Manley can't do it. 11:40 today on Spiegel and Parkins. The opening segment in the rundown brought to you by Burlington. Make your Burlington store your coat headquarters and save big on great styles for the family, plus sweaters, scarves, hats, gloves, and boots for way less. Burlington, style for everyone. Like I said, Wednesday's arguably the biggest day on the show, so we've got a lot to get to today, but something was sticking with me from our conversation with Michael Lombardi yesterday, and Mike Mulligan from the Mully and Hanley Show wrote a great front page of the Chicago Tribune sports section column on the Bears and firing John Fox, or maybe more appropriately, not firing John Fox, and the uncomfortable realities that face the Bears front office. And he had the great line in there that when a man introduces you to his fourth wife, you don't ask what was wrong with the previous three. So basically the question is, if you fire John Fox, do you have faith in the McCaskies, Ted Phillips, the brain trust, to get the next one right? Are they going to entrust it to a search firm? Are they going to entrust it to Ryan Pace? Is the infrastructure in the organization stable enough where you actually feel like the next coach would be an upgrade over John Fox? So with that as the backdrop and this from Mike Lombardi, I want to ask you guys at 312-644-6767, do you think the Bears are screwed here? So here's Mike Lombardi offering up his premise of how you need to build your organization when looking at a coaching change, ownership, the GM, where a team needs to be structured for. And we'll frame the conversation around whether or not you think that this from Mike Lombardi is correct.
NFL is about the head coach. It's not about the GM. And so the GM must support the head coach completely in the background. He can't be in the front. And in this program, there can only be one spokesman. That's the head coach. You barely hear Nick Cesario say a word. You think he has a State of the Union address? Heck no. He talks. Belichick's the State of the Union address. Pioli, you can't run the game. Look, I worked for a man in the Hall of Fame, Al Davis. He tried to run the game from the owner's chair. It doesn't work. It doesn't work. It's got to be the head coach.
So the premise is head coach has to run everything. He's got to be empowered. He's got to be the person that is evaluating the personnel of the running back room, even if it's a defensive-minded head coach. The running back's coach doesn't get to choose who the running backs are. The head coach chooses who the running backs are and then tells the running back's coach how to coach the running backs. You should listen to the whole thing on the podcast page or on your app or whatever, because it was great with Lombardi yesterday about why it's impossible to replicate what the Patriots have. But I wonder if he's right, because if he's right, I think the uncomfortable truth for the Bears is you have to fire Ryan Pace too. Because if you keep Ryan Pace and you hire a head coach, but he has to report to Ryan Pace, does that limit your ability to get Sean Payton or the next Sean McVay, who's going to have three or four different teams going out for him, or Josh McDaniels, whomever it is? Do you, if the head coach is the most impactful managerial management position in a football organization, more so than the president, more so than an ownership setting culture, more so than a general manager, if the head coach is at the absolute top of the food chain, do you need to fire Ryan Pace with John Fox so that you could attract the best coaching candidates? Because the best coaching candidates would want to pick their staff and would want to pick their GM. I was in Kansas City when Clark Hunt hired Andy Reid, and he hired Andy Reid, and Andy Reid chose John Dorsey. Now, they presented it like it was the two of them and both reporting to the ownership and everything like that, but John Dorsey and Andy Reid had a previous relationship, and there is a lot. No one mistook where the buck stopped in Kansas City. Like, if push came to shove and John Dorsey and Andy Reid disagreed on something, Andy Reid ultimately had final say, even if they tried to spin it otherwise. And the only reason why that you'd have any confusion, if you have any doubt about that, is this past offseason, one of them got a contract extension and the other one didn't. And John Dorsey's out of there and Andy Reid's in. And the team is still rolling and one of the favorites for the Super Bowl. But it's an interesting premise, because if you think the head coach needs to be the top person, and there are plenty of pieces of evidence the other way, Campy and I were going back over recent Super Bowl champions before the show today. Baltimore would be an example where Ozzie Newsome has more power as the general manager than Harbaugh as the coach, even though John Harbaugh is an empowered head coach. The Steelers, it comes from the Rooney family and their ownership. There are different ways. There are some where you could say it's more 50-50 and all of that. But in terms of sustained success in a dynasty, I think you look through NFL history, and it's true that Generally speaking, it's the strong head coaches. Joe Gibbs in Washington, Jimmy Johnson with the Cowboys in the 90s, Bill Belichick with the Patriots over the last 15 years, Vince Lombardi way back in the day, Bill Walsh with the Niners. For the most part, the dynasties, the prolonged successes of NFL teams has come with the strong head coach. So if you think that, and you also think, that I, like I do, that Ryan Pace, no chance he gets fired this offseason, is the smartest thing for the McCaskey family to do to bring back both of them. Bring back John Fox next year. Bring back Ryan Pace next year. Judge them both together based on progress of Mitch Trubisky and a wins improvement. And if Mitch Trubisky adequately improves, then Ryan Pace deserves to be empowered. And if he doesn't, then they're both out of here. And the next person is a $10 million a year head coach. Whoever it is. Like, whoever that person is in 2 years, that's the top candidate. Jim Harbaugh, the next Sean McVay, Josh McDaniels, whomever it is, that's when you say, all right, see you, Ryan Pace. You got to leave with John Fox. I am higher on Ryan Pace than many people. So I don't agree with Mike Lombardi. I think that Ryan Pace, it's all tied to whether or not Mitch Trubisky is good, and I wouldn't want to get the offensive mind in here as soon as possible to groom Mitch Trubisky. But the guy makes a pretty damn compelling case that Ryan Pace should not be the person who has say over the coach or personnel or anything like that, and it should be the head coach. So 312-644-6767. I'm genuinely curious. Do you think Michael Lombardi is right? And that's how you have to build an NFL team going forward. That there's too many specialists. That it's Doug Peterson does the offense in Philly, and Jim Schwartz does the defense in Philly, and they both report to a general manager who does personnel. And there's too many cooks in the kitchen. And while you might be able to catch lightning in a bottle and win it once, that's not sustainable because someone will get greedy, someone will have ego, someone will want too much credit, someone will get fired, and yeah, maybe they'll steamroll into one Super Bowl, which obviously we'd all be thrilled at, but the goal is sustained success. Pete Carroll's empowered in Seattle. Andy Reid is empowered in Kansas City. Bill Belichick is empowered in New England. Those are the best franchises, arguably, in the NFL right now. Is that the way you have to do it? What do you guys think? Jay? Campy?
The premise makes sense to me. The problem is you can't give someone that sort of power that has... They have to have a track record. And I don't know right now, who is that person that's available? Is it Jim Harbaugh? Okay, maybe. But his NFL time wasn't great. And he hasn't been... I think he's probably underachieved at Michigan by a lot of people's expectations.
Yeah.
Is it John Gruden, who hasn't coached in, what, 10 years? I just don't think you give... Like, if they were to do the equivalent of what the Dolphins did and hire Adam Gase, like the hot offensive coordinator, can you give him... Okay, you're a first-time head coach and a GM at the same time. You have to find the right person to do it. And well, I just don't know who that is right now. Even Josh McDaniels, just coaching for Belichick gives him that sort of credibility? I don't think so.
I think you're right. I think it takes a special person to be totally empowered. But Bill Belichick has a general manager. It's just he has final say on personnel.
Right, so it's more of a figurehead to handle the paperwork and maybe do the legwork of some things.
Right, the salary cap, acquire all of the information, and then bring it to him and present it to him, sure. And that sort of thing.
And I think that's what Lombardi is saying, too. But I'm saying for full-on, you know, personnel power,
right,
to give that to a first-timer or a, you know, a second-run kind of a guy, I'm not comfortable with that. I think you need someone with a proven track record. The names you named when we started the segment, you know, Walsh, Lombardi, guys like that, they proved it and they earned that.
Right, and it's very tough to find, obviously.
Right.
Belichick is a singular four. They're making a 30 for 30 about him. Like he is a guy that is clearly uniquely talented at the position.
So I just don't know who that is that the Bears can find. And, you know, I'm not a talent scout in the NFL.
What?
But maybe there's somebody. I just – sitting here now, unless someone of prominence gets fired – I don't see who that would be and how they can do it.
I think that Ryan Pace has done enough of a job and Trubisky has shown me enough in terms of just raw talent that if Lombardi is right, do that in 2020. Like, do that in 2021. and give Ryan Pace one more coach. Like, I am of the belief that give Ryan Pace a coach. Give him a young coach. Give him an offensive coach. Try to develop Mitch Trubisky. Try to do it how the Falcons did it with, they've got Dimitroff and they got Pioli and they got Dan Quinn. And they, you know, there's a lot of cooks in that kitchen. But in general, they win more games than they lose. They were a really competitive team last year, taking a step back this year. But, like, that is a good second-tier organization that seems to do more things right than they do it wrong. That's what I would do. Because I think, like you're saying, it's really tough. And no one has worked leaving New England. So people saying, oh, Josh McDaniels is the next guy, I don't know. Like, I'm not betting on Josh McDaniels.
Yeah, and even though Belichick was in the same profile as what McDaniels is now when he got hired, when he went through the Jets and then to New England, but still. And yeah, like, I've always implored people to read the Dan Pompey piece about how McDaniels has matured from, I believe it was from a few months ago, but a really good piece. But no, I'm with you. Yeah, you give Ryan Pace the coach, if for no other reason than nobody's for sure that John Fox was really his guy anyway. That was just kind of a, oh wow, this guy became available. Yeah, Ryan, here you go, but here's also John Fox.
Right, you're the youngest general manager, so go hire an old head coach so that there's some stability.
Right, yeah, they wanted the balance there. They hedged, and essentially you give up the boom or the bust, really, when you hedge like that.
Yeah, hey, you don't need to tell me. Jay, did someone really call in and say the Bears should bench Mitch Trubisky?
Yes, in favor of Mark Sanchez. That was the first call I took today. Yeah, that was... I was special.
When you get those calls, do you think that they're trolling you just to make you quit? Or like do you think they're, what do you think it's true? What do you make of that?
This person was very sincere.
Very sincere.
Yeah, I think there's a share of people that call in just to mess around and they're pretty easy to sniff out, but this guy was serious.
Okay.
He was very old.
Okay.
And
prefers the veteran presence of the butt fumble.
He actually called asking for Julie.
Really?
And I said, well, this is the station she works at. He's like, well, I'll talk to you instead.
Wow.
So, yeah, I don't know. But, yeah, Mark Sanchez is the answer for the Bears. So
Mark Sanchez is the answer for the Bears.
Trubisky, by the way, already has a higher QB rating in his career than Mark Sanchez.
I always just assumed.
Did you point that out to the gentleman?
I did. He said, well, that's your opinion. And I said, actually, no, it's right
hashtag
here on
fake
paper.
News.
Right. I assume that guy is like one of Jay's old neighbors, not by just like to troll Jay, but just by proximity of where they live and what they sound like.
Got it. Okay. Sounds good. Well, hey, Julie's got fans who like Mark Sanchez. Mike Florio at 10, your reaction to this. Is Mike Lombardi right? Should they just tear it down and empower a head coach? Are they doing it backwards in terms of the organizational structure? Do you have to give him another year? I give Ryan Pace one more coach. That's where I'm at. We'll find out where you are next on The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Amen. Mike Lombardi yesterday on The Score talking about that you need to empower the head coach. The head coach has to run the NFL franchise. The GM should report to the head coach. All the coaches should report to the head coach. And it sounds so obvious and easy, but it's actually not how it's done. He talked about how there are so many specialists nowadays so that everyone shares credit. Someone runs the defense. Someone runs the offense. Someone runs the player personnel. Someone does the drafting. And the coach is just an administrative type. Texter puts it pretty simply. So Danny, you just want to do the same thing that the Bears have done countless times before? It's a fair criticism. It really is. I don't think that the McCaskies will fire Ryan Pace and John Fox this offseason. I think Pace is guaranteed to be back next year. So the question is, should that be with John Fox and they be attached at the hip? Or do you want to keep splintering it where the head coach and the GM are potentially on a different timeline? And I think that Pace has done enough to get another head coaching hire. Personally, I can see why you wouldn't. And it's really an attractive idea to just say, go be bold and go hire an $8 million a year head coach and give him a ton of autonomy and a ton of power. But you just drafted a franchise quarterback. And if that franchise quarterback is the goods, you probably want the general manager to have a lot of power. Right? Like, that to me is the thing. Like, I still think Mitch Trubisky can be a star. If you too believe that Mitch Trubisky can be a star, why would you not want to empower the person that went out and got him? 312-644-6767. John in Northbrook's on the score. Good morning, John.
Is that me?
Is your name John?
It is, but that's not where I said I was. Nevertheless, let's talk. If you take a look at the history of changing coaches, in most cases, a team's record goes down the year after they change coaches. So that would be one reason to give our current coach a little more time. Second of all, the premise that you hire a coach who has all the power actually was not true based on the examples. If you take a look at Lombardi, he was the first guy that said yes after, what, 12 or 15 other candidates? If you take a look at Belichick, that was his second head coaching job. He was fired from the first, and they had no, you know, they had no idea what they had in a bottle, but they didn't give him any power. It was something that both of those cases the head coach earned. So that would be my premise, is that you look for the guy that can take that kind of power, but you don't give it to him right off the bat.
I mean, listen, that makes a decent amount of sense, but the Belichick part is that he had the power in New England, and that was – listen to the whole conversation with Lombardi yesterday. He disputes that it was a failure in Cleveland. They won 11 games, wild card game, et cetera, and then the power structure changed in New England because it was a better organization, and he was empowered by Robert Kraft. We didn't want to replay the entire Michael Lombardi conversation from yesterday. Just basically spend a little bit more time on the premise of who should have the most power in a football organization, the general manager or the head coach.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Thanks, Joe. This segment of Spiegel and Parkins brought to you by IKEA. This holiday, get the IKEA Mirbilonga dining table with a solid oak top at a lower price for only $5.99. Visit your IKEA store or IKEA.com for more details. IKEA, make the dream yours. 312-644-6767. Someone texted in, and another person was on hold and then dropped, about Bob Stoops. I have no faith whatsoever in Bob Stoops. He, very recently, and for a decent sample recently, couldn't win the big game at Oklahoma. And if Big 12 quarterbacks don't transition to the NFL 98 times out of 100, why would I think a guy who couldn't win the big game at Oklahoma over the last decade, who's now out of coaching, would translate to the NFL? No. To me, he was a great college coach who I would hire in a second to run a college program. Because he can make you relevant and he can recruit to places that are fairly difficult to recruit to, like Norman, Oklahoma. But the NFL, nah, I'm good on him. David, you're on the score. Good morning, David.
Good morning. I just got a couple comments on the offensive side of the ball of the Bears.
Okay.
What I see as a fan when I'm watching the game is I see erratic play calling and no chemistry with the players and coaches. Everything's off, it seems, and it's frustrating. What I see is a quarterback trying to please everybody. He's trying to please everybody instead of just playing. And you can see it's three people trying to control this offense. And it kind of flows into what you guys are talking about, pace.
You mean like too many cooks? Like, so the three people would be what, Dow, Loggins, Mitch Trubisky, and John Fox?
Well, I think it's Pace, Loggins, and Fox, actually.
Oh, okay.
With Pace, I see him trying to showcase Trubisky, showcase him. So they're giving him them difficult plays that he's not ready yet. And with Loggins, you know, I really didn't know too much about him, but I did some research, and he's a very good creative play calling. So when you see those creative play callings, you go, wow, and you go, wow, that's pretty cool. That's Loggins. And the dink and dunks, that's the smart plays. Loggins is an established offensive coach. So those dink and dunks, and those plays that get a quarterback in a flow, when you watch a team, a good team, and you see all the quarterbacks struggling, that's the bread and butter. They go to those dink and dunks.
So basically, you think there's too many cooks in the kitchen, and they're putting Trubisky in a bad spot.
They're always positioning him in a fail. He's always in third and long throwing. Okay, it didn't have to take this to get there, you know?
Well,
Fox, he's stubborn. That's what I see, and I think the game has I'm not trying to be, you know, mean about it, but I just, what I see as a fan, I just see him befuddled a lot and beaten by the other coach.
David, I appreciate the call. Slightly off topic from what we were discussing, but in terms of too many cooks in the kitchen, there's some validity there. I'm not with you on Dow Loggins, and I know some people say he's a brilliant play caller, but I'm convinced that you could find something like anyone who's risen to some degree of prominence in the NFL has references, right? Like, these people are successful through the metric of, like, there are high school coaches, and then there are college coaches, and then there are Power 5 coaches, and then there are NFL coaches. Like, they've risen to a level. Dow Loggins, 37 years old. He's the offensive coordinator and play caller for the Chicago Bears. Like, clearly, Dow Loggins has some talent and some skills and some references to get this job. But I think you can find, oh, wow, Dow Loggins. I mean, Chris Sims calls him a brilliant offensive mind. Okay. Based on what? I'm not committed to Dow Loggins being the guy to groom Mitch Trubisky. I just think they're in a tough spot because Ryan Pace has done, I would argue, more than enough to deserve a second head coach. So you probably can't empower the coach as much as you want to. But by the way, it's not like Ryan Pace is doing his Jerry Jones. Like, it's not like you see Ryan Pace on the sideline after games. He's not giving press conferences after games. He doesn't give interviews during the season for the most part. Like, you know, he does a pretty good job of empowering the head coach. It's just he's empowered a head coach who's not good, which is a problem. But he's empowered the wrong coach. So in theory, if he hires the next one and does it well, like what I would love is at the press conference announcing the firing of John Fox, if there was one chair at the podium. That's what I would love. No McCaskies, no Ted Phillips, no Ernie Accorsi, no nonsense, no search committee, no Bill Polian, none of that stuff. Ryan Pace at a desk answering questions about his vision for the Chicago Bears. We need this type of coach. We need this type of direction. We need this type of person. And then you see if he knows someone. And then you see if he can do it. To me, that's where you go. You empower your general manager who you empowered to draft your quarterback. And you sink or swim with Ryan Pace for the next couple of years.
And I know the perception is that is always going with the search firm, but when it just doesn't seem like it, because the last time when they did, you know, going with a Corsi and the search firm, they were looking for both, bringing in Phil Emery and then him getting Trestman after having to deal after, you know, getting stuck with Lovie for a year, which, you know, in his eyes was getting stuck with him. But it seems like the situation where they would trust Pace, but it's also, you know, assumption of competent owners. So,
which is a huge leap.
Yeah.
Huge leap. I fully expect Ted Phillips to be involved, and I fully expect there to be another search committee and all of that stuff. And I think that's ridiculous. Like, when college programs spend $500,000 for a search committee or $250,000 for a search committee, compile me a list of the top coaches in the country. Shaka Smart from VCU, Archie Miller from Dayton. You know, you should really check in on Greg Marshall at Wichita State. Sweet, I could do that too. I watch the sport. I could do that too. Not that hard. I wanted to kick something around with you guys before we get to Mike Florio, because Mike Florio and I are going to fix the worst rule in sports coming up at 10 o'clock. But this is a question that I did not think that I was going to need to confront as the host of a sports talk radio show. But what is the appropriate punishment for college kids who start an international incident on a school-sponsored trip involving two of the world's superpowers? It might be above our pay grade in the text lines, but I'm willing to try. We'll do it next on The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Mike Florio in 15 minutes. I apologize. I'm messing up. I'm ruining the show, flying solo. It's important to know who's on your team and who's got strengths and weaknesses and your own weaknesses and all that. And I'm not using all of the resources at my disposal. Matt Spiegel is off, but we do have Sat Meagle here. And so I should really be getting his opinion on all of the topics of the day. So Sat, Should the Bears fire Pace with John Fox and empower a head coach? Like, what should they be doing here for the organizational health?
Babe, I really like Ryan Pace's vibe. I think he's got a cool vibe going on. We talked to him in Bourbonnais at Baz Camp. I really enjoy his candor. But John Fox is really clueless. I think it's time to move on from Fox, but I want to keep Pace around for the vibe, babe. Oh, I just spilled my water.
Okay.
Rick, can you clean this up, my water?
Okay, good. That's perfect. We'll check in with Sat Meagle throughout the day. But mm-hmm. So he wants to get rid of John Fox, not feeling his vibe. Ryan mm-hmm. Pace and him are vibing more. Okay. Thank you, Sat. Jay Zawoski, Rick Camp back in studio here on the Spiegel and Parkins show. Did you guys watch halftime of the first game? Halftime of the second game was college football playoff power rankings and the whole nonsense that is just a money grab because the rankings don't matter until they've actually played the entire schedule. But does great for ESPN. It does great for debate and for us college football fans. But did you watch halftime of the first game by chance? Either of you?
No.
Well, no, it was a basketball game. Sorry, Jay. Rick, did you watch halftime of the first game?
I got right into the middle of all of this. So I turn the TV on, and it's right in the middle of it. So I'm playing a little bit of catch-up, and then I'm like, oh, this is what we're doing.
Right. So Reese Davis and Jay Williams and Seth Greenberg are debating what the punishment should be for LiAngelo Ball and his two other UCLA teammates who were in China with the team playing games and allegedly were caught on camera at three different high-end stores, including Louis Vuitton, shoplifting. And President Trump was obviously in Asia and apparently talked to the president of China and helped smooth things over, luckily for them, facilitate things, and gets these players back in America. Very high profile. I'm not sure if it would have happened with or without the president. He is clearly taking credit for it and probably deserves credit for it, or at least some credit for it. But politics aside here for a second, I am interested in what the punishment should be for three 18-year-olds shoplifting in a foreign country while representing their school on a school-sponsored trip. To sum it up, Jay Williams and Seth Greenberg had fairly different opinions.
I think they should be suspended for a couple of games, and I think you move on.
A couple of games?
A couple of games,
are
you move
kidding
on. Three
me?
Games.
A couple of games?
We're talking about kids.
I don't care about kids. You're taking your team to another country, a different culture. All right, they steal things in three different stores, allegedly.
Okay.
All right? To me, that's egregious. You're representing your family. You're representing your university. When you go to another country, you're representing your country. Let me ask you this. When those kids, I think those kids, if they were smart, would unplug and reboot somewhere else. Because every time they walk across campus the rest of that semester, all right, there's a dark cloud over their heads. That's an embarrassment to everyone involved. And let's say this. Let me ask you this. And I'm sure they're great kids. You're telling me they went to China, so they decided that was the first time they were going to make a bad decision?
I'm not saying, but everybody makes bad decisions in life, especially when you're 17, 18 years old.
So Jay Williams thinks only three games, which is ludicrous. They caused an international incident. Okay? Like, they committed a crime, and they caused an international incident between two world superpowers. Three games is absurd. Three games is what you get when you smoke pot, all right? Like, that. Three games is too low. But Seth Greenberg, intimating that they are probably repeat offenders and that they should have to change schools, is equally, if not more so, absurd. This guy was a coach of young men, like, 4 years ago.
I don't care about kids.
I don't care. Like, what are you talking about? It's serious, but the idea that because the incident happened in China, we should apply. They're like, well, I mean, they could have gotten 10 years in prison. So really, they're getting lucky if they just get kicked out of school. That would mean that you think that China handles shoplifting more appropriately than America. Like, no one is disputing that it was an insanely dumb thing to do, and no one is disputing that they should not be punished. But let's rein it in a little. What about suspended until conference play? mandatory community service. And by the way, how about an admission that we don't really know what happened and we don't know how remorseful they are? Like, if they're not showing any contrition and they really think that they're completely above the law, which because of the Ball family, it's certainly like people are jumping to that conclusion. Well, then, okay, maybe you do more of that. But assuming that they were adequately scared straight by being left behind by their team in detention by the Chinese authorities, they flew back by themselves from China. Like, assuming the public shame of the international incident and being left behind in the with Chinese authorities, assuming that that scared them straight and that they have apologized, admitted their mistake, and have shown contrition, I'm not kicking them out of school. It strikes me as absurd. John in Morton Grove, what do you think? How do we solve this international incident with UCAA?
Well, I have a different
UCLA. Sorry, go ahead.
I have a different perspective on this. My daughter, 10 days ago, came back from China for the, having completed six different trips as a university professor teaching on behalf of a major university. I placed the blame and the fault squarely on UCLA, its administration, and the athletic department for failing to educate these kids before they set foot in China, make them understand what the limitations and restrictions on their visas were, and more importantly, to keep an eye on them. In every city that my daughter had been in China, and she's been to five different cities and six different trips, there have been various levels of handlers keeping an eye on my daughter's coming and going under the guise of escorting them and working as escorts, but in reality have been working as government minders to keep an eye on her. And the lack of preparation or the lack of supervision on the part of the people at UCLA is really the problem here.
Well, but we don't know that they didn't tell them about, you know, don't steal things in China. Should they have to tell them about don't steal things in China? And part of this is the college experience and, like, getting to experience other cultures. Like, are they, you know, they're not supposed to be able to walk through the mall in their free time on their trip?
On a previous trip, my daughter also had escorted 21 students on a four newsroom tour in Europe, four different cities in Europe. And you can be absolutely certain that they were warned about what to do and what not to do and the extent to which the university could protect them in Europe.
So, John, you wouldn't punish the kids who actually stole something?
Yeah, I would, but I don't place primary blame on the kids themselves. Kids are kids, and they do stupid things. Unfortunately, in this particular case, and everybody's using the term shoplifting as though they stole a scarf or a radio or a lipstick. This was not that kind of shoplifting. They stole, and they got their hands on stuff that would be considered a felony prosecution in the United States. And it was just plain stupid on their part, and they should suffer on some level for it. But to place the entire responsibility on these kids, I think, is misplaced.
Yeah, fair enough. All over the map there, though, with on the back end and the felony stuff and the severe punishment. Like, my guess is that UCLA is going to go over some of their practices on, like, on oversight and all of that. I don't really have a lot of faith in Steve Alford to be the one to execute this. That's in other conversation. But kicking them out of school strikes me as absurd. Only three games strikes me as absurd. The president asking for a thank you note from them seems a little like grandstanding to me and probably unnecessary and beneath the office. Like, it was potentially a huge deal when they're in China. Now that they have very luckily had themselves eradicated from it being a huge deal, let's treat it like a moderately sized deal. A little bit of rational thought here. Seth Greenberg. And Jay Williams, what are you talking about? Three games. The president of China knows UCLA's players' names. It's probably bigger than three games for an incident. I don't know. I don't understand why logic went out the window with so many people. Mike Florio and I are going to fix what he calls the worst rule in sports. And I think there's a underreported an aspect of an NFL story that's being under-discussed. We'll talk about it with Florio next on The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.